Welcome to EXO, Your Unlicensed Therapist, the podcast where we deep dive into the chaos of being a human. I'm Kate, your unlicensed therapist. Emphasis on the unlicensed part. I'm just a girl, not a real therapist. This is the place where we talk breakdowns, breakthroughs, and pretty much everything in between. Now, if you've ever cried in the basement of a dingy dive bar, trauma dumped on ChatGPT, or spiraled over your bank statement, congrats. You're exactly where you belong.
Oh my God, I'm so nervous. Okay. I just literally, like, let me start this by saying that solo episodes, not my strong suit. And if I mess up and I sound fucking crazy, I'm sorry, everyone. It's my first time living too. Okay. Okay. With that said, everyone, welcome back to EXO, Your Unlicensed Therapist. I'm Kate, your unlicensed therapist, clearly in a chaotic mood today. And as you notice, I am alone in the studio today. Well, not alone. I obviously have my queen Destiny behind the camera. And my dog Marnie is here today. If you're watching, she is going to hopefully not fall asleep because otherwise I'll feel really insecure about what I'm talking about. But she probably will. We'll have the argument. That's a discussion for the car ride home. But she's here today to provide some moral support. Oh, did you see her? She just dragged her paw away when I tried to connect with her. That was really fucked up, Marnie. We're going to talk about that later. Anyway, welcome back, or welcome to EXO, Your Unlicensed Therapist. I'm so happy you're here. And today is an episode I've been planning for a really long time. By planning, I mean I've been thinking about it in my brain for like a year. And when I revamped the podcast, I knew this was going to be a topic I wanted to talk about. But it was one that I was still dealing with the wrath of. It was something that I was actively going through, and I think I wasn't quite ready to talk about it until now. So today we're going to talk a little bit about outgrowing your dreams and outgrowing the dreams and the goals you had as a kid. And especially for those of us who are artists, those of us who fell in love with acting or musical theater or singing and all of those things, what happens when you fall out of love with them, and kind of the cognitive dissonance that exists around that whole thing of like, well, I've wanted this for this long and I've spent all this money and I've done all this time. And it's really hard sometimes to choose yourself over the career you thought you wanted. Really hard. So we're going to talk about that today. And I think, like most people, I came to the theater as a child. I shouldn't say most people, because people come to theater from all walks of life at all different times. But for a lot of us in acting, we've been singing, dancing, acting just like for ourselves, like our whole lives. It's been a part of us in some way, whether you're doing it legitimately, like at a community theater or in college or at school or doing choir or whatever, or just in your room putting on a one woman performance of Phantom of the Opera, which is great. But mine started when I was about 4 years old, I think, and I had the utmost privilege of seeing the original cast of Wicked on Broadway. And the reason why I saw that show was because I was sitting in my living room one day. This was back when shows started having commercials. This was like the beginning of that big advertising time for Broadway, when they had those like B-roll footages roll on like CNN in the morning or CNBC in the morning to try and like market the show. And I saw a advertisement for Wicked, and I begged my parents. I was like, oh, I need to see whatever that is. And so my parents took me, which is kind of crazy that you brought a four-year-old to Wicked, mom and dad, kind of insane. And I was a really neurodivergent kid. I was super ADD, ADHD prone as a child. And I would not shut up, for lack of a better word. And my mom said that the 2.5 hours that I was sitting in the Gershwin, like my feet weren't even touching the ground, I was literally sitting there and like completely just in, like, I don't even know what the word is. I was just enamored. I was hypnotized by what was happening on stage. And I remember thinking, this is my earliest memory, I remember thinking that I want to do that. I saw Idina Menzel fly, and at 4 years old, I really believed she was flying. And I was like, you can do that, and that can be your job. That's amazing. And from that moment on, it really just changed the course and the trajectory of my life. And so from then on, I begged my parents to put me in singing classes and dancing classes, and I begged them to let me go to like a pre-college division. And I was so lucky that I had parents that wanted to nurture this side of myself, that really wanted to nurture my creativity and nurture this theater kid that they were given. My parents worked very, you know, in very corporate America jobs. I'm sure at least I would feel if I was in their position as them coming from no theatrical or musical background, having no idea what the hell any of it means. It's kind of scary to have a kid that wants something that is seen kind of overarchingly as a super unstable and difficult life. And they were just the most supportive and wonderful parents and let me live my dreams and let me go to class and just like express myself. And I did that my whole childhood. Theater was a place where I felt empowered and seen and like I could do anything, truly. And it sounds so cliche and so stupid. And I'm sure I'm going to hear this back and be like, Jesus Christ, Kate, get off your soapbox about why you love theater so much. We get it. But it really was. It was a place where I found some of the best people in my life. And it taught me so much about resilience. It taught me so much about myself. And I'm really grateful. And it was clearly like a through line my whole life. Obviously, from age 4 to now, I'm 26, like 22 years of theater being the cornerstone of who I am. I, you know, would make my parents perform Wicked with me in the living room. I would make anyone listen to me sing growing up. I joined choir. I went, you know, I went to a pre-college division. I took voice lessons, dance. I did so much. And then I went to college. I went to Northwestern and I continued that education. I got a theater degree and I got a music theater degree. And then I left school. And something that I feel like was told to us throughout most, if you've had an education in theater, and I don't just mean like a collegiate, a university education in theater. I mean, even if you did theater as a 2-year-old in your hometown, there is kind of this through line of like, this is a very serious art form and you need to devote your entire being to it. And if you are not willing to do that or anything else on the planet interests you even close to equal, you should do that and not do this. And I always resented that for a really long time for 2 reasons, I think. One, because I think I was in denial about the fact that I did have other interests and that I did have other things I really wanted to do. And I felt very, you know, almost defensive of that. It felt almost like a challenge in a way. And then secondarily, because I forgot where I was going with that. This was happening with my solo episodes. I forget. But anyway, all that to say, I felt very defensive when somebody said that to me because I felt challenged by it and because I think I was a little bit defensive and a little bit, I knew deep down that maybe I didn't want to do it as badly as I once did. And in college, that's something that's really ingrained in you. If you go to school, if you're lucky enough to go to school for musical theater, that is something that is told to you day in and day out. If you don't love this enough, you won't make it. And I always, that was like the worst thing you could have ever said to me in college. I was like absolutely petrified if my educator said that to me. And I'm also going to disclaim here that this, me talking about this, there's really no story within this whole journey for me that rides on any of my educators being abusive in any way. I was really lucky, as so many of my peers have not been. But I have been very lucky that the majority of my educators and the ones that really left an imprint on me were, for the most part, incredibly positive. And I still consider pretty much all of them to be my friends and people I deeply admire and love. And part of that is due to, I think, my parents instilling in me from a really young age. I think this is where the corporateness of having two corporate parents and like a theatrically crazed child really came in, because my parents taught me really early to, you know, take what serves you and leave what doesn't. They taught me that super early, and to not take any shit, to do no harm but take no shit. Those were like the two things that my parents really ingrained in me from a young age. So I think I really that really imprinted on me. You never know what's really going to imprint on a child when you tell them things, but that really stuck with me. And I think that's why I've been able to have such a positive experience in those learning scenarios and been able to shield myself from the ones that perhaps were a little bit on the more abusive or just not helpful side. And that obviously is not to say that they do not exist and that I did not come across them and that the people that I came up with didn't come across them and were deeply affected by them. I completely condemn those behaviors and think they're horrific. I just wanted to say that, like, this decision did not come because of that. My little disclaimer there. So anyway, I left college and I came to New York and I started working professionally. And I did a lot of cabaret shows. I worked in regional theaters. And sometime around like a year and a half ago, I just was super unhappy. And I realized kind of throughout this whole thing, and this is a through line of this episode, and I think of this whole ramble I'm going on, is that dreams change as you do. I think I didn't realize that my changes were happening. They were happening and they were happening under the surface. It's kind of like you don't know a pimple is there until it's there. It's like erupted on your face. But those things like develop for a little while. And that's kind of what I equate to this. Like it was kind of percolating and simmering for a little. And then all of a sudden it popped out. And, you know, dreams should change as you do, because you change as human beings. We are ever evolving. And nothing exists in a vacuum, not even dreams, unfortunately. So with all of that background said, I have decided to stop acting and no longer pursue a professional career in acting. And if you're watching this episode and you know me, you probably are aghast at what I have just said. And for those of you who I don't know and who are coming to this episode purely out of curiosity of this process, if you have any curiosity about changing career paths and want to know what that process was like for me, I'm here to share and be vulnerable. And I am here to also like alleviate fears about it, because I think I would have benefited from that in my position a year and a half ago when I was starting to feel these feelings. So the journey to get here to where I am started, as I said, about a year and a half ago. And it happened around, I think it was like New Year's. I was 24 and I was sitting at dinner with my parents and we were just talking about my future and kind of what I saw as my future. And as I was talking about it, we kind of were reevaluating the non-negotiable goals in my life, things that I knew I wanted and that was never going to change for me. For example, one of those is having a family, being a mom, getting married, making a home with my, you know, husband or partner. And those were things that I knew, and being financially secure. Those were things that I really, in that conversation, realized were non-negotiables for me. And I think for a long time, I had kind of been like, oh, I don't know, maybe. And then in this moment, I had like a moment of enlightenment, like, oh my God, yeah, those are super important. And in that conversation, and with my career track record, I had realized, I don't know if my acting career is going to fit with those goals. I don't know if, even if I get to where I want to go, I'm going to be satisfied enough in order to have those goals happen. And that was a really scary realization for me. I think that I grew up in an incredibly privileged but super like cushy life in which I didn't really have to face these decisions as many people have very earlier on than I did. And I think it was really frightening and terrifying. And my parents, you know, while being very supportive, also had said, you know, I think that it's time to reevaluate. The two people that have been my champions in my creative life, if they were saying that to me, I really felt like I needed to reevaluate. So I had also had moments of like, do I really want this? I hate this. I want to die sometimes. Like that, I say that
not being serious, but you know, I had found myself really disliking what an acting career really entailed. And I think for a really long time, I was disillusioned by what I thought it was, by this like really bright and colorful dreamscape that I had laid out in my head of what an acting career was going to be like. And then when I actually started doing the things that were going to set me up for that career, and when I actually started meeting people that were doing the things that I wanted to do and hearing about their experiences, it was kind of like that disillusionment popped, that bubble popped. And I was like, oh, the realities of this life are actually very different from what I have, from the picture I've created in my head. And I had a spiral. I spiraled about it. Oh my God, my poor boyfriend. Yet again, my poor boyfriend and my poor friends. Like, I was a disaster because it was calling into question a deep-seated cornerstone of my personality. It was essentially like a part of myself, like a cornerstone of my building, of my person, was being blown out. And my building was expected to stand with nothing there. And I freaked out for probably a year. And I was just like, do I apply to grad school? Do I become a teacher? Do I become a vet? Like, I was literally like, I don't know what to do. And I think I started like dealing with these things of like, I don't know if it's going to fit with my financial stability goal, my lifestyle goal, my personal values anymore. I don't know. I think also the pandemic changed a lot of the things about acting. And I don't, you know, I think it no longer fit. I think the pandemic changed things and I changed at the same time. And I think instead of going like this, we went apart. And after I was spiraling, having my moment, I booked a job and it was the longest contract I've ever done. It was around 4.5 months. And it was, oh, Marnie's moving. Hi, Diva. And it was the longest contract I'd ever done. And there are a lot of things about that contract that were equal parts incredible and so, you know, I'm so deeply grateful for, but also were really hard for me. That contract was really hard for me for a multitude of reasons. And the biggest one that I really want to talk about is that I didn't like it. It wasn't even the show. It wasn't the theater. It wasn't the people. And for a while, I think I thought it was. And then hindsight, you know, 2020, about like a month or two after that contract had ended, I realized, I was like, no, I just don't like acting in a long-term contract. And in my head, I go, oh my God, that's literally been my goal for my whole life. I've wanted to be on Broadway in a long-term contract. And I just hated every second of that. And that wasn't even a long contract. That was 4 months. Oh my God. Cue spiral two. I, you know, was really, really unwell about that. And realized that I just really didn't like it. Anymore. I'd fallen out of love with it. I'd put so much pressure on myself that I had sputtered out my flame and drive. And auditions started to be, they were never fun, let's be honest, but they used to be a little bit. There was like a little bit of fun knowing I got to go in and sing for someone and tell a story. That completely left. I went in and I was kind of going through the motions and doing what I had to do. Whenever I got a C-mail notification, I see you girls, I know how much dopamine that gives us, that rush no longer came. Instead, I was filled with dread. And I was really dreading doing anything remotely related to acting. I was dreading it. I didn't want to go to class anymore. The acting class that I love so much that I could talk about for years about how much I loved and my acting teacher in the city and that cohort of people and the work we were doing. I loved it. I was so happy to be there. And slowly I just lost that love and that fervor. And I started resisting notes, which I'd never done before. I had started, you know, not wanting to rise to a challenge. There was no pro to me doing so anymore. I think I was slowly falling out. I was falling out of love with acting. And I was, instead of letting that happen and letting that, you know, pull and push and pull happen, which happens in normal relationships and happens over the course of an actor's lifetime, instead of letting that breathe, I I pushed and I said, nope, you got to keep pushing. You got to keep doing this. Like I made myself stay and I was fucking miserable. I was so miserable. And because I was ignoring how I was feeling. I was ignoring it. And, you know, a thing I want to talk about, and I'll talk about a little bit later, is knowing the difference between, yes, this life is hard, and yes, you're going to feel really unhappy at moments, and this is hurting me actively, and I am upset 99% of the time. Upset 99% of the time, and upset 60% of the time, 50% of the percent of the time, hopefully less and less and less. But my percentage was getting more and more and more. I, in spaces in which I usually derived joy, like the classroom, like an audition, like in a process, were miserable. And I think that's when my brain started to wake up. They always say the universe, you know, whispers until it screams, and it started screaming at me. And now, so that had all happened, and I had pushed myself. I joined the union. I went to EPAs. I went to like 10 EPAs in a week sometimes. I was submitting every day. I was pushing myself. I was going to class. I was recording new reel footage. I was talking to my agents and my managers being like, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? I was actually going insane. I was burning out, and I pushed through the burnout, and I said, nope, this is just what it is. This is the part of the career journey in which it's just going to get hard and then it's going to get good. That's what I told myself anyway. And then we got to this year, January of 2025. And I just fell apart. I fell apart completely. I was so unhappy and just a shell of myself. I honestly, in that time, I don't recognize that person. It was a person who was depressed. Like, I was really unhappy and just God, I was so miserable and going through the motions and making myself do it because I felt I had a duty to my younger self. And that, again, is something I want people to really think about, is like, you don't owe that younger version of yourself anything. And I don't mean that in a, like, you know, fuck that younger version of yourself. Obviously not. Like, you need to embrace your inner child and heal your inner child in order to be happy. But that version of yourself, its number one goal is to keep you happy and safe. And if the promise you made it of like, oh, I'm going to be an actor, and that promise you made that three-year-old is no longer making you happy or feel safe, then what are you doing? And yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about, you know, that promises we keep for other people other than ourselves, including our younger versions of ourselves. A lot of thoughts about that. So anyways, at this time, yeah, January, February, kind of really until like March, I was pretty fucking miserable. And acting and singing was, as I've said, a foundational identity I've had since I was four. For 22 years, that has been the biggest part of who I am. And the thing that I thought made me the most interesting, and the thing that I based everything around, it was the thing that I thought held the most value about me. Nothing else was as valuable as my voice, my singing voice. And it was really hard because I didn't know who I was anymore. And, you know, people talk about that, of like not knowing who you are and how horrible it is. And I'm here to tell you that shit's fucking awful. It's so awful, especially as an artist, especially as a creative person, when you don't feel like you have a purpose or an identity that you can draw from. You have nothing, honestly. And so that's sad. That's the sad part of this whole thing. Let's get to some of the, you know, maybe we're on the up and up again. I then, in that time, I had talked to my parents and my boyfriend and some of my really close friends, and I had expressed, you know, I'm really unhappy and I think that I want to do something else for a little while. And they were all so supportive. The people in my life are just awesome. And they were being so helpful. And I started, you know, networking and talking to a bunch of people in a bunch of different industries. And throughout my career as an actor, I had also done a lot of side things that were born out of a need to get more footage on my reel. and to just be creatively doing things. But that led me to producing, and it led me to marketing, and it led me to just enhancing my organizational skills, my people skills, my rejection thick skin skills, and my adaptability and my flexibility. But all of that was born out of the acting career. And for the longest time, I always said to myself, well, you can't quit acting because it would have all been a waste. It would have all been a waste. You would have spent the last 22 years developing a skill you don't even need. You're not even going to use. You're not even going to monetize. We're going to talk about that too. And I think now, in what I just said about how I learned, you know, obviously all of the skills that I have built that are now going to help me in the next stage of my career were born out of my acting career, the needs of my acting career, that immediately debunks that claim that I've made, that it's like, well, it would have all been for nothing. It wasn't all for nothing. It was to lead me to this point and to give me the skills that, quite honestly, I wouldn't have got anywhere else. I would never have gotten in a corporate setting. I would have never have gotten truly anywhere else. Being an actor and the opportunities that that allowed me to take and allowed me to do are so unique and so specific to being having a career in the arts. And I wouldn't, I honestly wouldn't trade it for anything. And I'm really grateful for that. So that was kind of an overarching, another like big obstacle. Not only my identity was coming crashing down, but also this like age old belief I had where it's like, well, my parents have spent all this money and given me so much care and been so supportive and it all would have been for nothing. And I've gone through all this pain and all of these tears about not getting parts and waking up at 6 a.m. to go to a call. All of that was for nothing. It wasn't. It was for something. It was for a greater purpose that the universe had in store for me. And I, in this time of those two things breaking down, I was growing a new identity while I was remodeling an old one. I think I used to think that because I'm no longer acting, I can no longer be artistic. I can no longer express myself creatively. And that's not true. I think I'm creating this new cornerstone of my building. We'll keep going with that analogy. And I'm also remodeling the other one. I'm making it a little bit different. I'm making it so that it serves me. And I think I'm now in the remodeling phase, but at the time it was just fully demolished. Like it was just fully out of my life. And I was like, okay, I'm no longer an actor. And I said to all my friends at the time, I was like, I'm quitting. I'm no longer doing this. I'm quitting. And I started looking for jobs in marketing. And during this time, it was still really tumultuous and really hard. And I really leaned on my friends for support. And one of my very good friends said to me, and I quote, "It's a fight between the old self that still wants all the power and the new self wrestling for the chance to finally shine." And for whatever reason, that quote really, well, not for whatever reason, obviously, that's an incredibly insightful and wise thing to say and incredibly helpful to me. And it really stuck with me, and it really allowed me to understand this new self and old self and kind of how they can coexist at the same time, even though the old self is still there and it's remodeling and it's changing, the new self can still be there as well. And kind of they can form a little a bond and a symbiosis. I don't think that's the word. A melding of selves. Because they're both equally me. I had multiple breakdowns during this time. It was grief. Honestly, it really did feel like I was grieving someone. I was grieving a part of my life that I felt was completely over. Obviously, as we've since discussed, it wasn't all for nothing. I wasn't like grieving the loss. Like it was a loss, but not in the sense of like, I've lost all this time. I think it was a loss in the sense of like, a part of me is changing and a part of me and an old version of myself is dying. And I was grieving that. And I also am an incredibly, I dislike change. I'm really resistant to change. And I love to say that it's because I'm a Cancer, because I am. But I think it's also because change to me signals instability, and instability is my deepest like fear. The fear of the unknown is like fear numero fucking uno in my brain, as it is for so many. And so I was having breakdowns daily because it was a mixture of me grieving and also being resistant to this change that I knew had to happen and was making me really happy, but I was still freaking out. It was a really fucked up time, to be honest. And I kind of was in that process having to accept that my values had shifted. And the order at which each value was valued had changed. And I had to respect that. If I truly respect and love myself, as I try to do every single day, that is something that you have to, that I had to accept. And I had to start putting into motion. I had to start respecting. And, you know, respecting enough to actually act on it and not ignore it and push it away because I thought that I owed something to some former version of myself, which I didn't. In all of this, I want to talk a little bit about the success trope and breaking that myth and how, you know, that had also had a hold on me. There was that it was all for nothing thing I was dealing with, the identity shift, and then the success trope. There's this toxic belief that we as actors and as musical theater performers, you can apply this to any artist that ever exists, that we somehow come upon, and it's, if you don't make Broadway, you're not successful. And that is kind of the myth that we sell ourselves in order to make us feel small for whatever reason and to maybe keep that fire burning. I'm not really sure why we tell ourselves that. It honestly makes sense because that's where the majority of the money is in theater. And it's where a lot of the like fame and, you know, shiny accolades come into and all of those things. But that's not true. And I know that's not true because so many of my friends who I do know that are on Broadway struggle with the same things, struggle with the same shit. Even when you've been on Broadway, hey, if you take nothing else from this podcast, it's that my friends that are extremely successful on Broadway, in music, on television, in movies, it's that they deal with the same exact shit that every single one of us deals with, even the ones who have never done a professional gig in their life to the ones that have won and been nominated for Tony Awards. Like, everybody is dealing with the same issues, maybe on a different scale, but if it's not a success trope, it's a identity trope, or it's a like feeling like you're not enough trope, which we all deal with, again, on differing levels. Really, the truth of the matter is that success is subjective. And this is something I've worked on in therapy for years, and you're going to work on right now because you're in your unlicensed therapist's office. Success is subjective, and you get to define what success is for you. And for me, what I define as success, it's that you are able to maintain sanity, happiness, and health, all while doing the things you want to do. To me, that's success. I worked a really long time trying to figure out what I thought that definition would look like, and the way I say it changes a lot. It took me a really long time to kind of figure out what that definition was going to be for myself, and it has changed a lot, as it always will, no matter who I'm talking to. It always changes, but the through line is, as long as you have mental sanity, happiness, and health, you're good. You are being successful if you're doing the things you want to do with your day. That to me is what I think is success. And while I was workshopping that definition, a lot of the times I would find myself adding in like financial goals or, you know, accolade goals or career goals or new things I could put on my resume goals. Like, those were the things that I was putting in my definition of success, when in truth, all of those things are goals that are based on other people's measurement of you, when it really should be about your measurement of you. And that's why I landed on happiness, health, and sanity, because you are the one that gets to dictate all three of those things for yourself. So that was a little bit of me reclaiming that success trope. And it was something I was actively doing in this time in my life throughout all of that time in the winter when I was just, God, so miserable. And throughout that whole time, as I was dealing with all of these things, I was applying to jobs and networking, as I mentioned, and trying to figure out, you know, where in the industry do I want to be? And how do I want to be showing up in it? And that's when my podcast revamped. That's when I started vlogging. That's when I started, you know, I got a certificate from a school in digital marketing. I just kind of started getting these new skills because I always find for me, whenever I'm struggling about something, I always turn to learning something new because at least that novelty of knowing that I'm working on myself fills at least a little bit of the void of, I don't know what I'm doing. Help. At least I can tell that version of myself, like, hey, you are doing something. You're learning something new. So that's kind of what I was doing in that time. Obviously, it was guided by what I had seen, what I thought would be a good next step or a good next career for myself. And I got an internship in the spring. And I hadn't talked to my reps about it because I didn't really want to. First of all, I was still really coming to terms with not being an actor anymore and dealing with, you know, that grief. I was still actively going through that. But I applied for jobs and my plan had always been like, once I get a full-time job, I will communicate that to the people around me and publicly and to my reps and the people that are involved with me professionally. And I got an internship. And my whole mind frame around that whole part of my life and when I had accepted the internship was like, you know what? I'm going to do this internship. This is the perfect opportunity for me to have like a low stakes test run of what this career might look like for me. And so I took the internship and as I was interviewing for jobs, and as I went into this internship, I realized that I actually already possessed a lot of the skills that were required to be successful. And that all went back to, of course, it was all born from acting and the needs of my acting career. The skills were developed nonetheless. Because I had been a producer and because I had been a creative director of sorts in my own branding and things like that, I had developed skills on Canva and Photoshop and Final Cut Pro, and I knew how to deal with difficult people, and I learned how to organize and create timelines and stick to deadlines and how to work, you know, laterally across a company. That was mostly in my own companies that I like created, companies, loose term, my own projects that I had created. I learned how to work across departments and kind of like liaise between everyone. I realized I had developed those skills already. And another thing I had dealt with for a lot of it was like, well, if I don't act, like I have no skills. I have no hard skills. I can't just do another career. Like I don't have any other skills. And through this internship, I learned, I was like, oh my God, I do. I do, because I have always been this multifaceted person. I have always been this person with multiple interests. And I've always been the person to seek out the things I don't know that I'm interested in. Always. I've always been that way. And everyone's that way. If you have an interest in a new anything, you're going to seek out that information and try to learn about it. So all this to say, to those of you watching that are actors and that worry that you have no value to the world if you're not an actor, I call fucking bullshit, because you most certainly do. You're not just a singing, dancing, acting machine. You have other things you like, whether that be you love to graphic design and you love to create, whether that be you like to paint or you like to read. There are so many things from your interests that are not acting or singing related that you can turn into an alternative career path for yourself if you so choose. And no one told me that. And so I'm telling you that. And that even though you've been acting for the majority of your life and that's really what you've poured your heart and soul into, there are some like other skills that kind of come with it that are transferable to other places. And all you have to do is shift your mindset to find them. And that's what this internship did for me. And I had the best time. I was the happiest I had been in a long time. And I had set the goal of like, I just want to see if this is a viable career for me. I just want to see. And who am I to not give myself the opportunity to see that? Because no one else is going to give it. You know, there's nobody else I have to be like, can I do this? It's me giving permission to myself. So I gave permission to myself to really learn and see how I felt about it. And I loved it. I loved every second. It was the best. And the people I worked with and the company, and it was just an incredible experience, and I'm incredibly grateful for it. But it allowed me to let this new version of myself that had been, you know, baking in me for however long come out and really get to shine, like as my friend said. And it felt awesome. It felt like I, like the first time I sat in the Gershwin and watched Wicked for the first time. That's what it felt like to me. And I truly, at this point in my life, career-wise, have never been more happy. And it was really scary to get to where I am now, but it was so worth it and so tough at times, as I've already outlined. But it led me to this internship, which then led to my new job that I'm starting really soon for a company that I have admired for God ever, in a position that I know I will thrive and be able to contribute so much. And I'm just honestly like geeked about it. I like can't wait to talk about it more publicly, but I'm super excited and I have so much hope and I'm so curious. And I know there's going to be growing pains and I know there's going to be all of these things that are going to cause crash outs, I'm sure. But this process that I've just, you know, taken you through kind of proves to me and should prove to you as a person that all of your obstacles and things that you've overcome are going to prepare you for like the next ones that are going to come and throw themselves in your face. And I'm feeling like I'm so much more grounded and less frantic. And I think when, and that comes from acting and the trials and tribulations of trying to figure out, you know, okay, I didn't get that job, I have to get a new job, blah, 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 blah. Like all of that gave me, in that time, I had to learn a sense of groundedness, and that I'm going to take with me into my career, my next job. And it's also so much of my life had been taken up by acting and by, well, I can't say no, I can't say yes to this because da 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 da, I might have X, Y, and Z. I might have. It was always, and I might have. And it's honestly amazing that I chose that career path to begin with, since I hate instability so much. It's really, honestly, incredibly, the irony is not lost on me. But there is going to be more space for passion projects and things that I love. Like this podcast is something that I love so much. And my vlogs and just like my personal branding, like I love it so much. It's so fun. There's so much autonomy involved. And that was another thing that I felt acting lacked, is there wasn't much autonomy. Like I said, with my definition of success, everything relied on external validation and other people to tell me yes. I have now put myself in a position in which I get to tell myself yes. I'm the person, I'm the CEO of myself, and I get to say yes. And I get to say no to things that don't serve me. And I've set myself up that way now. And that's not to say that acting is a place in which that cannot happen. I think for me, it would not have happened. I don't know. But I think at this point, I had realized like, I just don't think that that's possible for me. And that's a whole other episode, honestly, talking about how to, you know, learn how to say no to things as an actor, and the kind of, again, dealing with the feelings around that, the imposter syndrome around that, especially if you don't feel like you have enough, you know, gravitas behind your name or your resume. It can be really scary to do those kinds of things. But I encourage it in whichever way you can. I'd have to think about that for a while. I'd have to create another one of these for something like that. That's a lot. Why I'm sharing this now, well, it's going to be incredibly abundant on my social media presence when I'm no longer announcing shows. And I'm no longer talking about acting, that I'm not acting anymore. So that's one reason why. Another reason is that I got this job and I felt like I wanted to give my podcast audience and my friends and my family a real deep dive into what that process looked like for me. It saves me a lot of voice memoing that I would have had to do if I did not put this out into public. I can just send them a podcast link if they really want to know what was going on. And I have, you know, as with all of my episodes, I have things that I want people to take away from it. I've kind of sprinkled them throughout this episode, but I want to encourage other people to listen to when their values shift and to not be afraid of those things and to normalize changing your mind. And to know that changing your mind, yes, oh God, it's scary as fuck. It's so scary and so awful in so many ways, but it is so worth it. The joy and happiness that I now feel is worth all of the nights that I spent crying and screaming and just like feeling so despondent and feeling so just awful. It was worth it. It really was. And the things that I kind of wish that actors and artists were told, I think as I was going through this time, I was thinking about this a lot of like, God, what would if somebody had told me something before all this happened, would anything make me feel better? I mean, the answer is no, but these would probably help a little. You are an artist no matter the career path you choose. If you have ever been an artist in any way, whether you're a painter or a sculptor or a dancer or an actor or a singer or like a director, whatever you are, that has something to do with a creative process or product, you are an artist no matter what your job title looks like, always, point blank period. And that's something I wrestled with a lot, where if I was, you know, going into a more corporate job, am I selling my soul? Am I, you know, leaving my artistic self behind? All of these things came up. And I think what I came to and what I'm telling you now is that you are an artist no matter where your money's coming from. You are. Another thing, and I mentioned this earlier, know the difference between a rough patch and actively harming me. There's nothing, I've talked about that for the past 40 minutes, so I don't need to go into that. Leaving the industry that you are in, acting for me, is okay. Coming back, also okay. Staying gone, also okay. All of those things are completely and utterly fine. You are the CEO of your own company, aka yourself. Going back to the thing of the autonomy of like, I am now giving myself power back and being like, I actually get to say what I do with my life and what I don't. Nobody gets to tell me who and what I am. I get to do that for myself. And I did think about when I was like, well, if I leave and I decide to come back, are people going to look at me like, ugh, so pathetic. She thinks she can come back. That's, she's so behind. I thought about that a lot. And I think I now realize that people might say that, but that's okay because, as I've said, I am the CEO of myself and I get to say what I value about other people's opinions of me, or if I value them at all. And I think, especially because listening to those kinds of people aren't going to benefit me at all, I'm going to just do my best to ignore that and just be like, you know what? I'm the CEO of me. I'm living my life for me, not for them. And if I come back and they think that's fucking weird, okay. It's not their life. They don't have to leave and then come back and then leave again. Like whatever I decide to do, they don't have to do that. They don't have to live with that choice. And they can say the nasty thing and that says more about them than it does about me. And that's period. And then the last thing that I think I want to reiterate again is about my success definition. Really try, you know, you don't have to take my success definition, but I think defining what success means for you and not putting in those like goals in there, like try not to attach it to anything tangible in your thing of success, because it's just going to hurt you in the end when maybe your goals shift and maybe that's no longer achievable for you. It just honestly is going to end up hurting you. And success, your success should be defined by you. And for me, it's mental health and fulfillment and maintaining sanity, happiness, and health while doing the things you love. And that is what success is to me. And reminder that with any career, it's a marathon and not a sprint. And I can, again, go into a whole other episode about, you know, social media and parasocial relationships and seeing all of the things that other people are doing and kind of taking their versions of what they think is success, because they're obviously putting it out into the world and putting it onto you. That creates a lot of really unhealthy mindsets, or it has for me. And those are kind of the things that I think I wish we were told as artists. And I'm now talking to people that are in college, that are studying to get their BFA, that are studying to get their BA, whatever it is in theater. It is utterly okay for you to change your mind. It's okay. It's also okay if you're like, I don't want to change my mind. I fucking love this. That's awesome. Stay, do it, or don't. It's up to you. You are the CEO of yourself. Literally, let's play a game of how many times I can use this fucking metaphor. You are the CEO of your own life. Nobody else is living their life with your best interest in head more than you are. And so you get to decide when you want to change your mind because you have autonomy. Free will. I love when I remember I have free will. That's literally what this whole episode is about. I remembered I have free will and I can actually do whatever the hell I want. I'm an adult. Like, that's literally what this whole thing was. And the earlier we can teach kids that, and the earlier we can teach students like you that, the better, because your mental health will thank you for it tenfold. It'll kind of just take another mental health situation cookie off of your plate, and you can deal with the other things like, you know, childhood trauma, et cetera, et cetera. To close this one out, I want to talk about three books that I felt really helped me during this time. As I've said, I've always been the person to seek out information when I feel like I don't have enough, or when I feel out of control and I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, so that I can tell myself that I am doing something by learning something new. And I'm going to talk about them. And they've been sitting here the whole episode if you're watching. But,
oh my God,
literally chaotic. Pulling you back. Okay. So these are the three books that I picked up during this time that I have read in the past 6 months. And they really helped me feel less crazy and also made me feel so much more calm. And knowledge is power. And it also, like, knowledge quells any kind of anxiety in me. Well, not any kind. There are certain pieces of knowledge that boost it. But this kind of knowledge, the self-help and informational, actual, real, trusting information, trustable information is what calms my anxiety. So first, this is the first one. It's called Think Again by Adam Grant. And this book, I talked about in one of my vlogs, and I loved this book. It was recommended to me when I was originally going to go get my MBA, LOL. Again, I've lived many lives. I've lived many crash out lives, and getting my MBA was one of them. And this was a book that was recommended, I think, by one of the schools I was applying to at the time. Again, LOL. And the big idea of this one is that the most successful and fulfilled people know how to rethink, unlearn, and update their beliefs instead of clinging to the old ones, which is something that I've talked about this whole episode and kind of something that I was literally actively doing. So when I read this book, I was like, oh, so I'm the most successful and fulfilled person that you know, Adam Grant. Love that for me. But in all seriousness, I think it really helped me, like, change my frame of reference and realizing that, oh, it's okay to not know something. This book is essentially like, it's okay to not know something. It's okay to admit you're learning something. And also letting go of, like, that actress piece of myself as my identity wasn't failure. It was rethinking what actually aligned with my current values and goals. And Grant, throughout this book, kind of encourages curiosity over certainty, which is exactly what career shifts require, and exactly what being successful and happy in life should require is staying curious. If I feel like every interview I ever watch about a successful professional, and somebody asks them, what would you tell younger you, or what would you tell the young people of America? Every freaking person, I feel like at some point in their speech, mentions, stay curious, stay a student of the world. And as annoying as that piece of advice is, unfortunately, it is true. And it's personified in this book. And he's a great writer. I don't know if you can see this close, but I have literally highlighted and underlined so many things. And he has a bunch of, like, studies in here. I'm a very visual person. So anytime I see, like, a statistic, it gets me to believe something a little bit more. This book is incredible. Brené Brown also endorsed this book. It's literally on the back here. She endorsed it. So you should, this one, this is a good one. The next one was recommended to me by my favorite podcast, The Psychology of Your 20s, with Emma Sperg, I think is her name. And she had Elizabeth Gilbert on her podcast, and listening to her speak was so awesome. And this was the book I think they were talking about. Actually, I don't think this is what they were talking about. They were talking about a completely different book, actually. But this is one of her best ones. This is called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. And the big idea in this book is creativity thrives when you let go of fear and perfectionism. two things that have colored so much of my post-grad life, fear and perfectionism. And literally raise your hand if you've been personally victimized by perfectionism. Me. And this book truly was just awesome. Like, I literally just opened to this random page, and the thing that I highlighted here is create whatever causes a revolution in your heart. The rest of it will take care of itself. Hello? That's like a random page. It's like this entire book is like that. And it's a little, like, definitely a little preachy, but in a way that feels like if you're in the mindset and the mind frame of like, I need to feel inspired right now and I'm feeling so uninspired as an artist, this book is for you. And in this, one of the big takeaways for me was that you can be still deeply creative without acting being your main job. And that creativity is not just something that needs to be monetized in order for it to be valid. I talked about that in one of my episodes called Creative Burnout, Common But Deadly. I think that's what the episode's called, literally help. And I loved doing that episode. And a large part of that episode was inspired by this here book right here. And, you know, she kind of, Gilbert kind of reframes creativity as something you live with, and that's like playful and light, rather than something that defines your worth or has to be monetized. And it's just, honestly, I love this book. It's the best thing in the world. It felt like a warm hug from like a mom, this whole thing. But a mom that has a PhD and is really smart and cool. Does that make sense? It was awesome. Everyone should go get Big Magic. It's really great. And then the last book is one that I actually just recently finished. And in this kind of whole journey that I've talked about, I did mention financial stability. That's something that I think a lot of us at this point in time really crave and value. And obviously, in light of our current administration and in the world we live in, the economy is kind of in a crazy and unpredictable place, especially for those of us in Gen Z. And there's a lot about financial literacy that's really scary. So the book that I picked up, kind of really only because I really liked the cover, was this book, Girls That Invest by Simran Kaur. I think that's how you pronounce her name. And the big idea in this book is really just to demystify investing and kind of all of the terminology that comes with investing and financial freedom that's kind of scary, especially through the lens of a BIPOC woman. And it's actually a pretty light read. And honestly, like, it read kind of like a fiction, which is crazy because she's talking about like inflation and dividends and ETFs and NFTs and like all of that stuff that used to make my eyes glaze over and I would fall asleep. But this book was incredible. And she specifically talks about it through the lens of women, and specifically BIPOC women who are first gen in their families and want to build wealth for themselves or for their families. And it really was an incredible read. And she's a really incredible person. And she has like an online presence. I think it's called Friends That Invest now. And she has like a podcast and a class and everything like that. But this book is a really great intro into her whole world. And the big idea here is that financial freedom gives you the power to live life on your terms and step away from something if it doesn't serve you. And that generational wealth starts with you. And she just really broke it all down in a way that made total sense. And I feel so much more empowered to figure out how to become financially stable. It really just debunked so much shit for me. I was really like, a lot of my family works in, you know, the financial world and accounting and investment, like whatever. And every time they talk about things, I would always sit there being like, blink, 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 blink. What? Like, I literally had no idea what the hell they were talking about. And now I do. I feel so knowledgeable. So those are the three books that I picked up and that I felt really helped me through this time. And there's so many other books that I read. I really only just picked three because I couldn't bring 75 books. But these are the three that I would most certainly recommend if you're going through what I went through in any capacity. And that's kind of all I prepared to talk about today. I can't believe I just said all of that out loud. I've been thinking about it for so long, and it's something I've been really nervous to talk about publicly because for a long time I wasn't super sure if I wanted to stop acting, and because this is part of my digital footprint, I was like, well, what if all these people see it, and then if they see me in audition, they don't want to give me a job because blah, blah, like I had all these thoughts around that. And I just kind of, again, went back to the, I have autonomy and I can do whatever I want in a respectful and kind way. And it was an exercise in me being vulnerable today. So thank you for letting me share. My dog was literally being such a menace this entire episode, but hopefully I cut it out and it doesn't irritate you. But Marnie, do you have anything you want to say? No, she has nothing she wants to say. That's okay. She did have a lot to say in a minute ago. But that's kind of all we've got. Thank you so much for joining us. I am so grateful for this next chapter and what it's going to bring for me. And hopefully the XO, your unlicensed therapist, journey lives on. And it will. And now I'll have more time to do so. And yeah, I'm really excited for what the future holds. Thank you so much for listening and for letting me be vulnerable today. And that's it. All right. You ready to sign off, Marnie?
Bye.
Ready to say bye? Say bye.